Yes.
We got back to the...
Bill, I think that might be a good idea. Boucher, why don't you call House State Affairs Committee to order at 8:51 on the first day of March? We're getting closer. Let the records show that Representative Menard, Finkelstein, Hanley, and Chair Boucher are present. The first item we have is committee substitute for House Bill 451. This is the committee substitute that was done and incorporates the main things that we have talked about, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Do you want to speak to it?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if we wanted to look at the changes we made yesterday, we should probably bring John to the table.
John, and would you notify Representative Donnelly that we've got this up and I want to move it out of committee as the first item?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The changes on page one, the at or below, at or was taken out from three on page 26. So yesterday the bill was applicable to range 16s and above, and this version is applicable to 15s and above now.
All right.
On page 2, on line 20, there is inserted Representative Finkelstein's language to affect a candidate or a campaign for elective office. Yesterday it said, or it had just a campaign. On page 4, there was inserted on line 25, it used to say, may accept a gift from a foreign government, and now it says from a foreign government or from an official of a foreign government. And then on page, let's see, bottom of page 13, the amendment that Representative Finkelstein offered yesterday is now inserted as section 18, the employment discrimination grievances, along with, on the following page at line 19, new subsection D, which was the amendment adopted by the committee yesterday, that the amendment to the amendment that defines committee here as only being the legislative members of the committee and not the public members. And other than that, it's the same as what you had before you yesterday.
Have you had a chance to review this, Dave? We got the committee substitute before, so let's get that as the document.
Mr. Chairman, I move we adopt the committee substitute dated 2/28/90.
Any objections? The committee substitute of 2/28/90 is before us. Representative Hammond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the record, I'd like to just maybe review a little bit of the history. I think we talked about it yesterday on the representation.
Okay.
And I think it was in 1974, was it, that there was an initiative passed by the people who
right.
said that a person who was elected could not...
The initiative applied to legislators, about six or eight top people in the Legislative Affairs Agency, basically directors, division heads, deputy division heads in the executive branch, members of boards and commissions, and judges. I guess that would encompass almost everybody. And one provision in there said a person covered by the initiative may not represent a client before a board agency or commission of the state for compensation.
Period.
In 1984, the Legislative Ethics Act was passed, and it has the current language that says a person covered by this chapter, which includes legislators and high legislative affairs people, may represent a client for compensation if they disclose it. I think all along the assumption was that this language amended the initiative as far as the legislative branch was concerned. My office issued an opinion to that effect at the end of 1988. I agree with the opinion. opinion, the opinion said repeals by implication are not favored, but it looked at the legislative history of the Ethics Act and reached the conclusion that in this case the intent was clear to supersede the initiative provision as to legislators.
That was in 1984.
That was in 1984, right. And the provision has remained unchanged till now.
Until now.
Right.
And now we have...
And now this amendment would... There is now basically a blanket permission to represent as long as you disclose. This would tighten that up considerably. This would say there's a lot of areas where you can't do it, period. And it would keep the requirement in the other areas where you still can do it that you have to disclose. And it specifically now amends the initiative to say, to make it clear that 2460 overrides that portion of the initiative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that probably is a good historical perspective of what's happened with this representation. Legislators representing a client before a state agency. I think that's good to have on the record.
Are there any further comments? If not, why I'll accept them.
I have a couple proposed amendments, Mr. Chairman. So
all right.
The adopting committee says to. I don't support section number one. We've talked about it a little bit in subcommittee, but clearly the other members of the subcommittee did support it. We've never had the whole committee here when this bill's ever been up, Mr. Chair. I don't think we've ever had our full membership here. So it's pretty clear no matter what happens, you know, it's not really, you know, going to be the majority or determination of this full committee. What happens, but yeah, I guess that's part of the committee process, but it's a little strange, you know, and something this big and this important. But anyhow.
Well, Representative Dahm, hey, they're called.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I can't drag you people in here.
I know,
and that
I know.
Includes
it's
all
tough.
Of you.
It's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah.
Because this is really complicated stuff, and it's, I don't.
Have you talked to the sponsor about that? In other words, have you had an opportunity to have you two discuss this concern? Is it pretty much something that...
Well, I'm, Mr. Chairman, I'm indifferent. Representative Davis is really the sponsor, and I'm pretty indifferent to this section. I don't have any interest in changing it, but I'm not an advocate for it either.
Okay, well, let's kind of go, let's talk it out for a minute. Okay. You have section one.
Right. Well,
that's primary, the representation, and...
That's the lobbyist.
No, it's the lobbyist. It's just...
Okay, all right.
It's real short.
A former member of the legislature may not engage in activities of lobbyists before the legislature for a period of 1 year after the former member has left the legislature. That's your...
Yeah, I'd just like to talk a little bit more about that. We've talked about it in subcommittee.
Right.
And I'd like to know... When somebody's considered a lobbyist for this section. I mean, I'd like to understand that better.
That's a fair question.
When this section is not in the ethics code, it's in the lobbyist chapter, and so you're a lobbyist when you meet the definition of lobbyist under the laws of, regulated by APOC.
So that's even if you're a a volunteer?
No, the APOC law essentially excludes volunteer. There's it's in 161, I think, 2445, 161, where it says this chapter does not apply to volunteer lobbyists.
Okay, so if you had another job, you were employed, I don't know, you're employed as a hot dog manufacturer, and you were an executive in this hot dog plant, and that's what you did after you left the legislature, and then there was an issue before the legislature dealt with state regulation of hot dog meat. how many hours could you come down here and lobby, or how many phone calls could you make before you were suddenly in violation of this law?
I couldn't give you an exact answer to that. It would be on whatever the APOC regulations say. Essentially, anything you can do that doesn't require you to do as to register as a lobbyist, you can do. Anything you could do that would require you to register as a lobbyist, you can't do. And frankly, I don't think that's very much. I mean, I think in the situation you're describing, your contacts down here would be extremely limited, if any.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's why I don't support this, is because I think that state government is really pervasive in this, you know, and a lot of things that anybody would normally do in their normal careers are going to have, you know, some limited, you know, connection there, and I think it's just too restrictive. And I've changed my thinking about this. At one time, I thought this was a good idea about two, three years ago. And the more I've seen of the way these things work, I just don't know if it's that good an idea. I mean, I don't know what influence a former member has. I mean, I don't see if they have any greater influence. I mean, I think the only thing you're really getting at here is the idea of somebody hiring somebody as a lobbyist as a benefit to them, you know, for something as an exchange or something for something they did while they're in office. And they don't have to hire somebody as a lobbyist to do that. They can just put them on the payroll somewhere and just put them in a cubbyhole. Where on the other hand, if it's really a legitimate part of your business, you're going to be precluded. So I don't see that it gets to what it's supposed to get at effectively, you know, in a way that's, you know, not seriously impacting the ability of people to move in and out of the private life and also have a citizen legislature.
Well, if I can respond to that, I was interviewing the Ethics Committee yesterday, and I think that is probably one of the biggest problems that we'll run into, the definition of, quote, a citizen legislature. Now, I don't know about your career field, but in mine, it's totally impossible for me to do any work without being in some kind of conflict, specializing in telecommunications. Every piece of legislation comes here, so I've just made a practice not to do anything, but I think it's a choice you make. I mean, nobody's twisting my arm to go out and get those votes and get elected. But by the same token, let's say, for example, I was offered an opportunity for a contract from a major telecommunicator this past session. It was big bucks. I knew somewhere in the back I might have to be looking at them on the competition issue, which is big bucks to them. I just said, sorry about that. Now even that issue is here for next year. Let's say, for example, I decide, I quit, I run for mayor, I'm not elected, which isn't not a chance in the world without happening. But I'm going to get a phone call right away, you know, and I can come down here and I know all the legislation. I mean, I got it on my computer, what have you, so anybody trying to go against me on that. And 2 years from now it would be the same thing. I see most of these things as gray areas, but I do think what we're primarily dealing with, and lots of times it's not fair, is the perception of the public of what we're doing. That's why we're in such disrepair now. They perceive that something is wrong, and it's not always fair, because their perceptions are fed through other media other than us being able to talk to them direct. I wouldn't say I'm totally happy with it. I think it's another penalty you place for serving. But then if it will increase public confidence in the process, I think that the sacrifice might be worth it. I can certainly see your concern.
Mr. Chairman, I think the example you gave is a good one of what I was talking about. I mean, they're still free to do, offer people jobs, and that's real legitimate, because people here are real qualified people in certain areas, and they're going to want their expertise. But they could still do that, just not make that person a lobbyist. And so what have you accomplished by this? I don't see that it really accomplishes anything.
Well, maybe what I said. It put something in law that might create a better public perception of the process. Well, that's what. But anyhow, I respect your opinions, and they're usually very well thought out. But what I would like to do is move this thing on. And could we call up the other people so everybody can vote on this? How many people can we get here now? Because I think he has a valid...
I'm not sure what the representative...
Mr. Chairman, I disagree with Representative Donna that they all had a chance to talk about this at various points it's been here, and they have problems. I guarantee they'd be here. Obviously, they don't have problems with it.
See if we can get them. I think that we ought to make an effort. I know we've called, but what happens is always on my committee, I get such fantastic people that everybody wants their time. Now, if I had a bunch of zeros on here, it'd always be filled, and they'd be sitting there staring out the channel. But I'm competing for such great talent. I'm not kidding.
Can I speak to
you? You certainly can.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm like Representative Finkelstein. I don't have strong feelings. I think, your response was very good. Maybe that's if it creates a more positive perception on the part of the people. But if this stays in there, I think it would certainly be a worthwhile amendment when it gets to the floor. Because I think that maybe the whole body might debate, this, that whether this committee approves it or takes it out or leaves it in. But I think you've got a valid point. I mean, we're addressing one small issue, and maybe because the lobbyist is a little bit more visible than someone who's sitting there in a cubbyhole, and then the public perceives, there goes that legislator, using using his influence or something, and he's getting paid back or something. And whether we should react because of public perception, I don't know. But I think it's your arguments are worthwhile, and I don't have strong feelings one way or the other. I think Representative Finkelstein has indicated the same thing, and I'm not sure what would happen on the floor if the whole body, and that might be the best place for us to debate if indeed it remains through the rest of the committee process.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just to facilitate it, then because it looks to me like emotional lose, and I know that, but I still would like to do it on the record, because I don't want anybody saying when we address this issue on the floor, we're doing committee work on the floor. So I just, I move to delete section 1.
Okay. We have a motion before us to delete section 1. Does anybody want to speak to that motion? All those in favor?
Oh, go ahead. I was just going to say, I don't have the strongest feelings on this, but I do think that it's perceived, and in some cases is true, that a legislator would use their influence as lobbyists, and I think we should avoid that, and I don't think 1 year is unreasonable.
Okay, all those in favor of the motion, which is to delete section 1, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question, John?
Certainly.
John,
the motion failed, by the way.
Within the parameters in here, is there anything in here that covers folks outside the legislature now?
There's the provision that a complaint can continue or can be filed against a former member of the legislature. That is about all that I can.
Yeah, I guess that's something I might be looking to do. I just want to put on the record if this ever comes to the floor then, too, because I think there's people in government that'd be a lot more important to put this provision on than legislators. And the Director of Division of Insurance is one of them. And there's a few others out there. But there's no prohibition on them doing this. And so I'll just put it on the record that people should be aware. I know nobody ever reads these things, but at least I'll be able to say this on the floor, that I warned everybody in committee that if we, this ever comes to the floor, I'm going to be moving to amend the whole scope of this act to cover those other folks too, because I think that's only appropriate.
There is in the Executive Branch Ethics Code, which is 3952, a prohibition against a former executive branch person working on a matter that he or she has worked on for, I think it's 2 years. I'm not sure whether it applies to lobbying the legislature. I think it does on the same matter. Now, on a different matter, it might not.
Well, Mr. Chairman, for the record, the former director of the Division of Insurance, Mr. George, down here is a lobbyist for the insurance industry. And that happened the next year after he was out of that position. So, I mean, I think that's happening a lot. So, John, maybe you could take a look at that and see, you know, what's going on there.
The chair recognizes, and we've got a very studious committee secretary, and she'll make sure that those objections, and they may not read other committee meetings, but ours are so great that they do read them. They're clear, concise, and to the point. And I doubt very much if the records of this minute will not reflect how you feel. That'll probably dominate it. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. Sometimes you can solve some with a 6-member process in a subcommittee, but in the final analysis, that's what that forum is out there before. I hear people say lots of time committee work on the floor, and I think that's just a series of buzzwords. And you're certainly entitled to stand up and go for it when it gets out there. I don't have to tell you, you're entitled, you can do it anyhow, and I'll have no objection to it. I'll just let the people that have worked on the legislation, when the time comes, let them debate their point. My major role here is to see that the process moves along and that everybody participates in it fairly, and I recognize your concerns at this time. So with that, I'll accept the motion to...
Mr. Chairman, I had a commitment to Representative Davis for one additional amendment he requested. Representative Davis requested that the committee consider the proposed, there's an amendment, I think, in the packets by Representative Davis on spouses.
Oh, okay. Right.
They handed it out at one time. It was early on in the process. Mr. Gagin, you're familiar with it. You drafted it for Representative Davis, right?
Right.
I think the original proposal from Representative Davis dealt with spouses and children of legislators.
Yeah.
Spouse or child. I'll move it on his behalf.
Where is it, Dave? Section 1, line 13.
Yeah, and I just move it to read, the amendment would read page 1, line 13, following C, insert the spouse of a member of the legislature may not engage in activity as a lobbyist before the legislature. And like I said, I had a Representative Davis asked me to do this, and in the subcommittee, I said to him that, you know, that I'd facilitate that request since he doesn't sit on this committee.
We have it before us for discussion. Is there objection? So moved. That'll increase the floor debate. Guaranteed. We'll probably have the Women's Commission there. Well, that's good. All right.
That's fine.
The amendment, it passes. Is there anything else?
Probably take away
further discussion. Chair will accept the movement. I mean. The chair will accept a motion to move this to the next committee of referral with individual recommendation.
So move, Mr. Chairman.
Any objection? Thank you. And at this time, I'd like to take a thank you for the hard work that was done on this by by both your staffs and the individual. It's really a pleasure to work with you people because I've got a habit of popping stuff out into subcommittees and usually the hottest potatoes. So you did a fine job on it. I'm sure it'll be further discussed down the road. All right. All right, on the next piece of legislation is HB 563, which is a disclosure on the permanent fund income. Yesterday, Representative Donnelly indicated to me that he had some concerns with this. And what?
Or maybe Faith has.
I had not had a chance to review in depth your concerns, so what I'm going to do is take this and put it on the bottom of the calendar because I think we ought to have some dialogue or discussion on it. And I think, is it okay? I had wanted to move it out, but I'll defer to your concerns on it and put it to the bottom of the calendar so that we can move some of the other stuff and then you and I can sit down and
understand.
Okay?
No, you might get these other bills on here.
Yeah, right.
And you know that there's only four of us here.
Beg pardon?
You need to get the other bills on, there's only four of us here, so you won't be enough.
Come on, Dave.
It's good.
I don't play games. You and I will sit down and talk about that.
No, that's okay.
All right, the next piece of legislation, primarily because we've got HB 402 for the Applied Telecommunications Center, and Chancellor Patrick O'Rourke is going to be online.
Mr. Chairman, I'll call him up
now. Yes, right. I can briefly go over this while they're connecting online. This is a part of a combined information package that I have been working with over the last 5 to 6 years, and this year Representative Brown and myself, I have been working on it. Basically, what it does is provide for using the expertise that exists within the university system to begin to place emphasis on the resource, information. It's not designed to superimpose another technological structure. But we have talked, or I have here, on numerous occasions about the utilization of information so it's accessible to decision makers in government and to the people of Alaska. Because in the final analysis, that's what this the information is supposed to be for. Since political bodies, by and large, have relatively short institutional memories, i.e. a governor being here 8 years or a legislature 2 years, that has been one of the biggest things that have seen us start and stop for the last 10 years in the whole information information field. And that might have been fine then, but technology is beginning to move so rapidly that we need to have the institutional memory. And it's always been my feeling that the University of Alaska collectively has some of the finest minds in this field in the country. They are doing things that in my visit with MIT, I'm not seeing doing there. So really what this is a marshaling of our forces to pull them together instead of each people working out there. It says Center for Information Technology. Center is a state of mind. It's not a new building. It's bringing together the forces and the people that we already have out there to do this.
Can you hear that okay? Are you hearing the testimony? Okay.
So that pretty well covers it. Dr. O'Rourke, are you online? Oh, we got that lower button pushed down. Dr. O'Rourke, can you hear us?
We've lost it.
Unfortunately, our teleconference, we weren't able to do that this morning. One of the things that I'd like to point out, too, and it's very important in the process, who has been involved in the process? Is this just something that's come out of left field that I had a bright idea on?
Yes, it's
definitely not. In fact, I would credit the university system.
Yeah, how's that? That's right.
Over the past 6 years, with the direct support that they have provided us, we've gotten hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of consulting from the University Journalism Department. For example, could you get me one of those Chugach conference things there?
You want to try this again, Red, and see if...
Yeah. Dr. O'Rourke, are you there? We've got to kind of jury-rig our telecommunications this morning. Can you hear us?
Yes, Representative Boucher, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can. I was just commenting briefly on 402, and maybe not briefly. And I guess the major reason that we had brought this piece of legislation forward this year as a part of an overall packages because there needs to be a home for technology, information technology, and as you and I both know, it's a complex subject. Usually when it's in the political arena and you sit down and you talk about technology and information and computers, about 30 seconds into it, people's eyes start to glaze over. And But the importance of information to our state, its economy, its future, the importance of the ability to be able to exchange information, the importance to have access to information by both the decision makers and the public and the private sector is, as technology speeds ahead, especially in the first 5 years of this decade, is going to be tremendously important. And I indicated that I thought that the university was the proper body that we begin to focus, and that it was less a building than it was a state of mind. A commitment as a people that information technology was going to be very much a part of our future. We could well be the information crossroads in the Pacific Rim. And I was expressing the appreciation that we have for what the university has done. I doubt very seriously if we would have laws in effect today, the Telecommunication Information Council, if it had not been for the time that the journalism department, specifically Professor Pearson, has put hundreds of hours in, many of them pro bono, helping us to pull all of this thing together. So it's been both Representative Brown's feeling and myself and others that have been closely associated with it that if we are to build a future in the information sciences, that seed must be within the university community. And there's no intention in the legislation to tell anybody how to design curriculum or courses or what have you. You people are doing a fine job in that. I guess what it serves as in the early days of our country, I like to refer it kind of like the Boston Commons, as an information commons, a place to bring our brains together, where so often we dig in the ground for the next piece of oil or the next chunk of metal, and we truly fail to mine our brains, to use the thinking qualities that are inherent in the people of this state. And I think, I'm sure you've had an opportunity to read the Chugach Conference, but normally, normally conferences like this cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. This was done ad hoc. The people from, thanks to Mr. Strohmeyer here, IBM had William Ahern, one of the foremost people in the country in his field here. Walter Bender, who is recognized as by his peers as the foremost in interactive media. And it talks about discussing the future of communication in Alaska, and I think you'll find it a very interesting reading. But one of the things that we found out was we need a home if it's to grow and thrive and benefit our people. And it was in this spirit that the legislation was introduced, and I want to thank you, Dr. O'Rourke, for the effort that you and Wendy and the other people have put into this. So this is the first time that it's been before the committee, and excuse me if I've said in 2,000 words what I could say in 200. But I'll be long gone when information and the use of that resource is the major economic backbone of the state of Alaska. It will be the product that the United States of America sells in the year 2000, information and all of its related things. It will affect us in the way we live. It'll probably ultimately bring changes about that truly see this nation move beyond its planetary borders to other areas of the universe. And what a wonderful opportunity for young people to specialize. So one of the things that MIT said in talking to Seymour Papert, who heads the Department of Epistemology, he's eager to come here. He said Alaskans, by their nature, are hard thinkers. He said, there's a lot of knowledge, but not a lot of thinkers. And they're looking to be able to work together with the university. Dr. O'Rourke?
Perhaps a comment, I don't know if now is the appropriate time or not.
You go right ahead, sir. I will stop. I get carried away on this subject because it's pretty obvious.
Well, in many ways, I guess it's our belief, at least the group of university faculty and myself who worked on some suggestions for HB 402, that the Chugach Conference was really kind of a landmark. To a large extent, I spent 12 or 13 years out in Bethel, Alaska, and it's been my observation over the years that in many ways our communication links in Alaska are the network similar to what other states have in their transportation system. And so to a large extent, I believe that information sciences and communication technology is a particularly appropriate area for Alaska to make its mark and to carve out a niche as a world leader. In many ways, I think we're already more advanced in our use of technology than many of the other states. At least we find that when we visit our colleagues at other universities throughout the country. A large part of the university's rural education program also rests on communication technology, and yet the technology continues to advance at such a pace that I'm not sure that we are optimally utilizing what is there. And so I guess we would like to express one strong support for the notion of creating a center for information technology whereby we might be able to get an even better lead beyond where we are, to better understand what we have, to better understand how we use it, to eliminate some of the fears of the public in terms of better use of communication technology and the rest. There are not many universities in the country today that could do what I'm doing in terms of just testifying on a particular piece of legislation being 1,500 miles away. And so I really do think Alaska has a very, very bright future in this area. Also, we'd like to express our belief that the university system is the appropriate place for this type of research, because it will provide a degree of objectivity that you might not find in other sectors. Additionally, it provides an opportunity for students who are enrolled at the university to participate in the advancements that will be occurring through working as research assistants in the research projects that would evolve. The goal, as you have prescribed it, is indeed not a building and not necessarily even a place, but a focal point within the state and within the university, with the resources to bring about concentrated effort on evolving our future in information technology. And we'd like to express our both our strong support for the committee substitute as it is emerging, and for the efforts that you have made in this regard.
Thank you, Eddie. Let the record show that Representative Kay Brown, she and her staff, I'd like to just call it the BB bill, because the two of us have worked hand in hand, both the interim and what have you, and her staff deserves an equal share of the credit in this. In fact, she had initially introduced the legislation, but they say great minds work in the same place. And Kay, do you want to comment on it?
I'm happy with the proposed committee substitute, and I thank the university for their work in resolving some of the concerns about it, and I think it's in good shape.
We have, let's adopt the committee substitute for HB 402, which is before us now. Are there?
I would move that we adopt the committee substitute for HB 402, Mr. Chairman.
Any objections? It is before us.
I mean, we got something to...
Wendy, do you have any comments?
Mr. Chairman, just to, I think Chancellor O'Rourke covered the important issues. I'd just again like to thank you and Representative Brown for taking the leadership on this bill and identifying an area of such importance, and also acknowledging the important work that's already gone on within the university. And I think that is not well known, that we have people who are considered the primary consultants in the world on many areas in telecommunications. And we're very proud of that, and proud of the fact that you've acknowledged that effort. We've been through 5 years, as you know, of sort of restrained budgets and internal focus, so it's been difficult to take the leadership in creating anything new. And I think the effort on your and Representative Brown's part in sort of giving us a little kick to provide a focus in what is not a new program area, but a new sort of organizational focus, I think is greatly appreciated. So, thank you.
Well, thank you.
Representative Boucher, if I might just add a couple of additional comments. The
go right ahead, sir.
The establishment of such a center like this, which has the opportunity to pull individuals from all of the three universities in the state together into cooperative research programs, and to also involve the private sector in some of this activity, I think is a good bridge, a bridge within the University of Alaska system for cooperative efforts to occur, and a bridge between the university and the private sector for equally good bridges to occur. And to this extent, the formation of the center in this particular way is something that we think is very, very positive. Just on a couple of small notes on the committee substitute, we were wondering whether or not it was possible to to have the reporting that you desire by the university on the activities of the center and the expenditures of the center to be part of the annual report that the university already provides to the legislature rather than a separate report.
Which part?
Section 4, page 4.
Let's take a quick look at that.
Yes, I would be referring to page...
I believe it's section 3 on page 3. Chancellor O'Rourke is referring to a section that says the center may charge fees for the services and the university shall account separately for those fees. I believe that's...
I would like to stress that the university acknowledges that it accounts to the legislature for all of its appropriations, whether it be from fee income, grant income, or state appropriation. But it would be helpful to us if, I suppose, the correct solution in that particular case from our standpoint would be to scratch the word separately and just account for our fees collected under this section.
Then
a related point about page 4,
okay.
Section...
Yeah, okay.
Would be section 11C.
Same problem with that?
University shall submit a report to the legislature in each even-numbered year on the center's activity, and again, it's in that place that we desire that that could be part of the annual report that we are currently required by law to submit to the legislature. It would ease the separate reporting within the university structure.
The last thing we need is another report. I mean, I think it will...
Those are minor points, though, Representative Boucher, from our standpoint.
They're minor, but I'm glad you called them to our attention. How would that read now? What do we need to do? Just...
About the legislature shall include in its annual report to the legislature a summary of the center's revenue and expenditures during... Or a summary of the center's revenue and expenditures during the previous year.
About activities, revenues, and expenditures.
That would appear to cover it from our standpoint.
Okay.
No, I think that's fine. I think that's better.
Those are good suggestions, and they're technical amendments, and we can make those to the bill, sir. Is there anything...
Well, thank you, sir.
Is there any other suggestions that you have?
I think the committee substitute addressed the issues very well, but the committee and I discussed for the better part of a day here a couple of weeks ago, and so we're appreciative and thankful for your incorporation of those suggestions into the bill, sir.
Is there any objection to the technical amendments that have been recommended here? If not, Chancellor O'Rourke, they will be incorporated into the committee substitute.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right. And we'll send you a copy of that up with those changes in it. Are there any other comments? If not, the chair will accept a motion to move it out of committee with individual recommendations.
So move, Mr. Chair.
It's on. Is there any objections? I'm going to do like Kirk Gibson did. Right on. I think there's no piece of legislation that's passed out of here. It doesn't have much of a constituency. It isn't going to make any headlines. And nobody's excited about it.
But I'm very excited about it here, sir.
I am. You're damn right. I think we're on our way to the 20th century. And the first thing that can focus is how we function down here, which is back in the 19th century. Thank you very much for your help, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, 402 moves on to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations, and I think that's...
Finance.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Were you going to take up 403?
We need to take up 403 as an appropriation bill.
Okay. Yep, I got too excited here too fast. Right. Okay. We have before us the appropriation bill on this particular legislation, which you... Wendy, do you, would you like to go over that?
Dr. O'Rourke talked to the fiscal note.
Okay, Dr. O'Rourke, would you like to address the fiscal note?
Okay. Yes, sir. The
appropriation bill.
Committee, just wanted the legislature to know that it is our belief that this requires a continuing appropriation of some type. Certainly there will be the possibility over time and even in the immediate future some external revenues generated from services that the center would provide, also from grants that could be obtained from other sources, including the federal government. But it is our belief that the state probably needs to make a continuing commitment to this. And my only confusion, I suppose, on 403 is whether or not that is indeed the intent, or whether it is intended for just temporary funding.
Mr. Representative Brown can address that.
The normal process for new legislation is that when legislation is initially adopted, it carries a fiscal note or a separate companion appropriation bill. And then in subsequent years, those dollars are rolled into the base of the agency or department where those, where that new program was established. So I don't believe that it's necessary to appropriate for more than 1 year at this time. It's technically possible to do so, but I think we've got an uphill battle just selling a $1 million proposal. And I know there have been some discussion about attempting to appropriate for multi-years for this program, but I believe that under the normal way that things are handled, the expenditures here would be enrolled into the base, the program base, for the following year. So,
if that is what the language says in the bill, that would certainly be our desire.
So I think that the revisions look good and appropriate that were suggested by the working group, and I support the proposal as it's outlined. One question I did have related to the $59,700, what is the source of federal receipts that's anticipated?
Doug emerged for the first time in the committee substitute, and my guess is that Professor Pearson probably has identified a grant source that he may be an applicant for at the present time. But we did not discuss that specifically. Perhaps Mr. Burns, who worked on this, might have more specific knowledge.
Through the chair, Representative Brown, we were trying to identify federal receipts where we could find federal receipts. We couldn't do that. If in fact we went for these type of receipts, we wanted to be able to encumber that money. And that's why that language appears in there. It's certainly open for debate and discussion at this point.
So this would just be authorization to receive and expend if federal receipts can be obtained?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Problem from the committee's standpoint in the committee substitute on 403, which appropriates the funds for two separate fiscal years. Is that permitted by your rules?
The committee substitute that I have, I don't see where there's a... Where does it say that?
I don't see it.
I think there were two versions of it. The version that the committee is now considering is a one-year appropriation of $1 million.
Is it which committee subsection?
Including the federal receipts. I actually have have two versions of it here, too, so I guess perhaps I'm not sure.
The one 61560E Kramer, dated 227. It's the code in the top right-hand corner of the work draft.
61560E. Okay, it's 60E. If it's 60E that you're discussing, that removes the concerns I just expressed. I was looking at 61560H. But E, I think, addresses the concerns that I had expressed.
Is there any other comment?
How many of these positions in the fiscal number 9 teaching position?
Representative Brown.
Thank you. On page, on the second page where you're enumerating the items in the budget under GIS UAA, what is encompassed within the item faculty support staff?
I'm sorry, I neglected that one, Representative Brown. Lynn Bauer, who is the lead representative from the University of Alaska Anchorage on that, indicated that this would normally consist of a technician and additional student support.
Representative Bowman?
Yeah, would all these faculty positions be eligible to join any union there at the university?
Well, as you probably have read, our union situation is pretty mixed up at the present time. We're not sure where that's going to ultimately fall out. Two faculty positions, both at UAA and at UAF, there's one each at each of those institutions in the GIS component. As we have defined the bargaining unit that we think is represented, we believe it applied only to the former community college faculty, and so it would be our position that these two individuals would be hired as university faculty with research assignments as well as teaching assignments, and therefore not be eligible. But this, of course, is subject to negotiations, and if negotiations are unsuccessful, to binding arbitration.
Are there any other comments or questions? One of the things that I might add here, and I want to do it cautiously, I have approached several major foundations one of them, the Hearst Corporation. And there appears to be, if we make this step forward, opportunities for grants. And there is going to be a tremendous amount of federal interest in this area. I mean, the entire thing is exploding. So if I were to say, what could we put in the university that could attract high-level fellows, if you will, and money, this would certainly be it. And people have both industry, some of the larger companies. In fact, the Media Lab in less than 5 years, and granted that is at MIT, is attracted well over $50 million. They're doing things, it's changing so fast that the university have taken the step beyond in the areas of research. So I do believe that there are opportunities there in the long run. Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, your comments just make me wonder if whether in 402 we should provide specific authority to receive grants, or whether is that automatically something that a university agency could do, or is it necessary to specifically provide that?
Can I comment on that, Representative Boucher?
Yes, certainly, sir.
Here at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, where we have a large grant component, what we do annually through our budgetary request is to estimate the federal program receipts, the other restricted program receipts as part of our overall budget request, so that the legislature can appropriate sufficient authority for us to receive grants. I think it's taken care of through the normal budgetary process that we utilize. What would be necessary for the University of Alaska Anchorage would be an FY92 preparation to take a look at the center and determine whether or not it might need additional budgetary authority, but I think they can do that under existing statutes.
Thank you. Any further comments? Representative Donnelly?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. I'm getting a lot of complaints from my constituents that despite the promises of the university otherwise, a lot of the core courses on the community college level courses are being deleted, and the nighttime courses are being deleted. There were promises made during the unification drive that that wouldn't happen. Is there any chance that this is going to be another incentive to the university to bleed off some of that money for that core curriculum that people are complaining so much about that you're wiping out now?
May I speak to that?
I'm not sure where the question was directed.
Wendy is going to answer that, Chancellor O'Rourke.
Through the chair, Representative Donnelly, I think is correct in the sense that particularly in the Anchorage area where the student population is now up to nearly 19,000 students, that the enrollment increases in that community have been so substantial that we are having difficulty. Every single course spring semester was closed out. We're currently utilizing Chugiak High School every single night of the week, every classroom. Every available classroom within the Anchorage area is filled up. And the enrollment demands have outstripped our ability to keep pace. It has nothing to do with the restructuring of the university or ripping out money from that were formerly assigned to the community college. Our enrollments have increased so substantially since those days with no addition to resources. So it's just a matter of trying to meet the demand. And there certainly has been an increase in the number of lower division courses substantially over the last 3 years because that's where the demand is. So so we will, you know, the question, will this strip out money from the core? That's why, I guess the answer is no, but that is why it is has to be contingent on separate resources identified for this purpose. We are not in a position where we can take existing funds to handle this particular obligation. We're doing fighting like hell right now to try to find the resources to accommodate the students we have. And the number one request in the UAA budget this year is for core curriculum additions. So there will be opportunities for your Representative Donnelly and everyone else in the legislature to try to get money to the Anchorage campus to accommodate that, those increases.
Representative Donnelly?
Yeah, as to the deletion of courses, I've been informed that as there's an attrition taking place at the lower level, the former community college teachers, that they're being replaced with university professors instead of community college teachers on that same level. Is that true?
Through the chair, Mr. Donnelly, what's happened in Anchorage is faculty, that decision on what type of faculty to hire is a faculty decision, as you know. And within each department, as a faculty is through attrition and retirements and so on, the faculty within each department decide what type of faculty they need, whether they need to have somebody who teaches only lower division, whether they'll do it with part-time, whether they'll hire a full-time, and it varies department by department. I think it would be inaccurate to say that former community college type faculty, that is faculty who teach only lower division courses, have been replaced by faculty who do not teach lower division. That is simply not true. It varies department by department. Some departments have replaced faculty with new faculty who teach upper division and do research as well. I think you'll find if you take a close look that it varies from department to department.
Maybe you could give me some overall numbers on that.
I'd be glad to provide that for you.
Well, just in Representative Donnelly's core courses, this very thing focuses on the technology that the young people are going to need in the future. This is not some, this is what's coming down the track. And
Representative Batchelor, I would add that the GIS components of both UAA and UAF will enhance both the lower division and upper division course offerings in those areas.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And I guess, you know, I've said it before. I mean, we are not putting the dollars into higher education in the state that we should be. We're blowing on lots of other stuff. It's the one place our dollars should be going, you know. And we're constantly asking them to run on a jury rig operation and attract our kids that are coming out of high school. And so I guess this more than anything else, I think we can bring young people, if we develop the quality that matches the talent that we have out there, we'll see our young kids coming to our university specifically for this. And that is my fondest hope anyhow, that we'll supply world citizens. We have every opportunity to do it, and we've got the location and the opportunity. So with that, I would accept a motion to move the fiscal note out. Any Representative Hanley?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Any objection? So moved. It moves out with individual recommendations. Dr. O'Rourke, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
I'm sure Representative Brown will be in contact with you. The next committee of referral is to her committee.
Very good, sir.
And I'll be up there speaking on it, too. Thank you,
okay.
Kay. Thank you, sir. All right. I know you people have been very patient waiting here this morning. We have another committee meeting and subcommittee meeting at 10 o'clock. Which can we move on?
5:40. We might want to bring that up.
Yes. Let's see, 5:40. We have before us an act establishing Space and Science Week by Representative Davis from Ketchikan. Sherry, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a pretty simple bill. We looked at having it be a resolution, and it was determined that a bill would be necessary in order to actually establish this week. You've got all the backup paper and position paper. I'll be very brief. I'm very concerned about our national problem with lack of knowledge about the sciences. In particular, I'm concerned that most of our population has little, if any, knowledge of geography. This is evidenced by the need for the recent passing of Representative Ulmer's HJR 64, which asks that Alaska be placed closer to where it geographically is. A recent presentation by Colonel Jim Adamson, one of the space shuttle astronauts, gave me the idea to focus attention on the subject by using astronauts in schools to spark students' interest in geography and other sciences. Colonel Adamson presented slides that he had taken from the space shuttle showing such prominent features as volcanoes, mountain ranges, lakes, etc., and finishing with shots of southeast Alaska, which, by the way, had never been taken before from a shuttle. I know students would be interested in meeting and talking to Colonel Adamson and his fellow astronauts. My intent with this bill is to focus some attention on the subject, and at the same time, I will be working with school districts and NASA to see if we can develop a program for several Alaska schools to have astronauts come and present some information.
Are there any questions? Not, the chair will accept a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill number 540 to the next committee on referral with individual recommendations.
Any objection? So moved. HB 540 is moved to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations. Thank you, Sherry. What might we see?
Can we bring the 563 back for discussion?
There isn't going to be time on that. I'd like to move it out, but we've got Representative Donnelly and myself, we've got some discussion we've got to do on that. Yeah. There just isn't time to do that.
We have floor today?
No, we've got a subcommittee. Yeah. Well, there is, let's see, the year of reconciliation. Have you been waiting? Let's take that up. That's Representative Wallace in Bruinsburg. Thank you for your patience. My apologies. I'm sorry we didn't get to all of the stuff today. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dan Bloom, and I work for Representative Wallace, and I'm here to speak on her behalf. Representative Wallace has introduced House Concurrent Resolution 57 for the purpose of using the year 1991 simply as a symbolic peg on which to allow different organizations around the state to develop this theme of reconciliation in the state. She chose 1991 as a date because it's the 20th, symbolically it's the 20th anniversary of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. It could happen in 1992 or 1993 just as well, but 1991 has some symbolic meaning here in the state. And the name of the observance of the year of reconciliation is simply to give newspapers and TV stations and conferences and workshops a possible theme to choose from during the year of 1991 to help people better understand the various feelings and histories of the Native people and the non-Native people as we move on into the future. It's simply a symbolic way of moving into the future, and it's kind of a public relations concept that, if used wisely, can produce some healing and certainly no hurt.
And we need our chair. Are there any comments?
Mr. Chairman, only question I have is just the word reconciliation. It took me a while to sort of dawn me the what you're trying to get across. I'm just not sure it's the best word. I think I understand what you're trying to get across, a year mm-hmm. of harmony or a year mm-hmm. something, mm-hmm. but reconciliation, I'm just not sure that's the right word. It implies implies something pretty extreme in the past, and the polls I've seen in recent times show actually a much less antagonism than there ever was in the past between urban and rural and between native and non-native. And so it's not clear to me what we're, what in 1991 we're reconciling.
Mr. Chairman, it is a loaded word, a potentially loaded word. In this context, it doesn't intend to be loaded, in that it's not reconciling two opposites. It's more, it's used more in a spiritual sense of human reconciliation. I don't want to say with their creator. It isn't a religious concept, but it's more of a spiritual concept that all people will reconcile with themselves and with history. It isn't natives and non-natives reconciling because, as you said, there isn't that kind of historic antagonism that existed down south. It's simply, perhaps a better, another word could be found, but it, you're right, it's a year of peace or a year of harmony. Reconciliation means to reconcile opposites. It also means to, it also has a spiritual sense of putting the past in order and looking to the future. But I understand what you're saying.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I do understand what you're saying now, Dan, and I'm just not sure it comes across in the resolution. Mm-hmm. The resolution says, whereas natives have lived in Alaska for thousands of years, and whereas there's now 450,000 non-natives and 75,000 natives, it sounds very conflict-ridden, you know, more so than I think is the case.
Mm-hmm. Should we delete something, or?
Well, there won't be anything left to delete too much.
I understand. The intent of the resolution is not to focus on native, non-native issues, but rather the state as a whole with a multicultural diversity. But and I agree, it shouldn't.
I think a better thing is a year of cross-cultural activity or something like that. That's in here too.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a much better, much more positive theme. I just, you know, the literal way people take the word reconciliation is you're reconciling something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think the cross-cultural themes is a really good one. And I think that reflects better what your remarks are. Mm-hmm. And I don't really care that much either way.
Would
Representative Hammond?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I would agree. I was getting kind of a negative connotation, and I was reading a little bit of backup and reading about the South Dakota, and talking about a century after Wounded Knee, and they proclaim 1990 as a time for healing wounds that have festered between Indians and non-Indians for a century. So I guess I was sort of getting some of the same negative kinds of feeling from what's happening here, and sort of focusing on negative rather than the positive of what we would want to be celebrating in 1991. I guess I would like to see. That word and I hear what you're saying about reconciling ourselves with either with nature or with our spiritual foundation or whatever. But yet it doesn't somehow come across that way.
Or another idea, Mr. Chairman, would be cultural recognition too, something like that. I think there's a lot of ideas there. The way that, for instance, it could be taken. At least 1990 may be the year there's a subsistence amendment to the Constitution on the ballot, and that may be a very just harmonious campaign built around that. And it may be, and someone might take this as sort of, well, 1991, we're going to have to reconcile all those differences. And I think there's something else you're trying to get across here, different than that. It's like broader than just a few issues in, you know, a few years, something that is the whole history of our state.
Well, we can keep this and move it out next week. There may be some concerns here. Why don't you work with Representative Finkelstein?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd rather not work on it.
Beg pardon?
I'd rather not work on it. I it is my resolution, and I'm willing to pass anything. I'm just offering my comments. Maybe the sponsor could think about it and see if there's another way to say it. It isn't going to make any difference to me, but I think it's, you know, in the long run, we want to make sure people get the message that you're trying to get across, and it isn't my message, so I don't think I'd be much help.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hatton.
Okay, my only thought was we want to be talking about unity, maybe, or something that we're working, where we're Alaskans together, or something. Mm-hmm. That was, I guess, my thought, recognizing each other, what each has to bring to the table or bring to the state as Alaskans, the new, the native, the whatever. And I don't know, maybe a theme that would be more unity than reconciliation. Mm-hmm. Maybe the representative also would like to just take our comments.
Well, why don't I do this? This is the only committee of referral on it, and amazingly enough, it's the small things here that create the lightning rods. The big and the other, you know, somebody can focus on that. And so why don't we hold this over, and I'll have staff get together with you, and we'll see what can be done, because I think certainly we want to move it on, and I guess the rules will be the next committee, right? So, and we'll just carry it over on the calendar for next week in the interim, or it'll be on the calendar. In the interim, we can see if there is another. Because I know there's been a great emphasis within rural Alaska, both native and non-native, of spirit weeks. I mean, it's happening. The need to look at the inner resources, and I think this is definitely more a reconciliation with oneself. You know, there's been a tremendous amount of disruption in the culture life. It's obviously impacting. Something is happening out there when you've got the tremendous suicide rates and the alcoholism and what have you. I mean, there's a damaged spirit. It doesn't appear dollars and law enforcement are doing it. So we need to focus on the inner being of all of us. There's too doggone much emphasis on the things that pass into dust and not those things that are internal in us, no matter what God you worship. Okay.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. So it's in that spirit that I'd very much like to see if there's a magic word out there that can reflect the spirit of what you're attempting to do.
I think we can find another word.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Please let Kay know that we will move it right along.
Thank you.
With that, we'll adjourn House State Affairs.